welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry, and this week the question is, who's a faithful, who is a traitor, and will Emma will Emma murder me?
I mean, I think we all know the answer to the third one.
Yeah, exactly. How are you, Emma Bunnell?
I am very, very well. Loving the traitors.
So good. We're not going to get diverted. We could, because I know you and I could talk about this for
We could have a whole different traitors podcast.
Yeah, we could. But we were, oh, there's an idea. No.
It exists.
We'll behave ourselves and not talk about how Mina is an absolute queen and carry on.
Star. Also, Freddie last night. Wow.
You wanted to give him a cuddle, didn't you?
No, it wasn't. No, I wanted to give him a cuddle the night before, but the way he managed to turn the group around,
I thought
was exceptionally well done.
Anyway, no spoilers. We'll do this off air. Because we actually do have a hell of a lot. I seem to say this at the beginning of every week now, we have a lot to get through. We never get to have a quiet week, do we?
There are no quiet weeks in politics anymore. I think we all have to accept that.
I think we do accept that, but there's a huge amount going on, and we'll start, I think we should, with the economy, because it kind of sets the background for quite a lot of other stuff. You'll forgive me, Emma, for not being either a bond market specialist or a trained economist. But
me either, I'm afraid.
Yes. But what we do know is there's some very serious ruminations going on in the British economy, which mean that the cost of borrowing is sky high. It's higher than even it was under Liz Truss. We need to give some context because there are global things going on as well. And it's not only... The British economy that's seeing these kind of things, but the British economy is particularly acute in the British economy at the moment. Things like the yields on 10-year bonds, which not a phrase I normally say, but it's basically the cost of government borrowing over a longer period.
It's the cost of government borrowing, and those yields are going up, obviously means that the money that the government has already borrowed is more expensive.
Correct. And therefore has a knock-on effect on making the money less money they have to spend on stuff they may want to spend it on.
Phrase none of us used unless we were talking about a 1980s comedy character, headroom, is now like something on everybody's lips.
And therefore it also may mean Rachel Reeves has to either raise taxes, cut spending in certain areas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I read today on the BBC, she's demanded that it was the Times actually, that she has called on other departments to come up with more growth measures and cease anti-growth measures as she heads off to China. That's kind of where we are. The ramifications are significant, both economically and politically. You and I are not best placed to discuss the economics, although I think we've laid out the basics. The politics of it are very interesting, though.
Yeah. So, look, I'm not an economist. I'm not particularly an economic thinker, as it were. I mean, I have thoughts about the impact of the economy and what we mean by the economy on politics and people's day-to-day lives. Of course I do. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in politics and I wouldn't have a socialist outlook. Having a socialist outlook, as far as I'm concerned, is about the economics of people's day-to-day lives. But as I understand it, there are, as you say, global pressures. But those global pressures mean that people, when they are investing in things, are making decisions about which countries to invest in. And at the moment, the UK is falling down that list.
Yeah. So there are particular concerns about the UK. We're going to have to use that horrible word, stagflation, by which people mean they think inflation is going to persist and also there will not be very much economic growth, which is obviously, if you're an investor... businesses in general wanted to build stuff in the UK, it's not exactly the conditions you want to put your money into.
Yeah, and I think there is a difference between what is happening now and what happened under Liz Truss, and I'm sure we're going to come on to Liz Truss in other ways.
Oh, we will.
With the Truss quasi-quarting thing, what happened was an incredibly sharp drop after a single fiscal event. So basically, their mini budgets caused essentially a panic in the markets. I'm not going to say a run because I think that's a technical term, but basically a panic in the markets that led to huge divestment in the UK, which pushed interest rates up. And that's why, it was a crisis in that sort of short, sharp way. What's happened here is more a kind of long-term response to vibes. And markets are as vibes-driven as all the rest of it. And I say that not in a judgmental way.
No.
It is simply that's how, all of these things are driven by human concepts
Correct.
and the human concept of vibes. I think, we all think that we're rational actors. None of us
No.
are.
Markets are by definite are, human beings. Yes, now using very complex algorithms and computer systems and so on and so forth, but they're ultimately human beings making decisions about buying and selling. I mean, that's the most basic.
And I
It's,
think even the
I'm
government's
being a bit basic
biggest,
there, but.
even this government's biggest cheerleaders could not say that business confidence is particularly high at the moment.
Correct.
And I'm not going to make any bones about that. That's not my job. I'm not a government cheerleader. I'm a government supporter. But I always say to you, and I always hopefully believe that one of the things that you do as a supporter is to tell people where they're getting things wrong. Because if you want them to do better, you have to tell them where you think they're not doing so well. I think the last year, the narrative, I think it was a little overly simplistically designed to kind of do the George Osborne thing in a very, very different world, where you
Well, which
come
you
in and go,
mean?
oh my God, it's a disaster, and the last government crashed the economy, and blah, 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 blah. While it has done the job fairly reasonably of putting the blame on the last government, but reasonably both in terms of it's achieved that goal and it had the goal to achieve because it's true, what it hasn't done is injected the thing about things can only get better is you have to then make things better. And
Can I just
look, the
say,
government.
we've done the Emma Bunnell bingo tick list so far. What have we got? Slagging off George Osborne, Tories crashed the economy, things can only get better, I'm a socialist. We've only been doing the show 4 minutes or something. We've gone through the greatest hits.
Absolutely. Look, I am nothing if not predictable. But and we've talked endlessly about the comms and where I think they've been getting that wrong. I think that they probably accept that now. They do need to inject a note of optimism. We are a long way from the next general election. This may all be completely, we may be in a completely different world by 2028, 29. But at the moment, this is where we are. The problem Labour has, and it is a significant political problem, is that they have promised two things. First of all, that they will be the government of stability that never break their fiscal rules. And secondly, that they will improve public services. And the third pillar that was supposed to make both of these things possible at the same time was growth. And I think they have got a lot of things in the legislative pipeline that might help with growth, things like planning reform, things like becoming a green energy superpower. But those take time. They're not going to change tomorrow. And the markets are quite short-termist. People don't just deal day to day, they deal second to second. So it may be that when these things come in, the markets will then go, well, hey, we love this, and it will all bounce back. But there is a long period of pain to go between now and that potential future. And that period of pain is a problem because what it will mean, because Rachel Reeves has been, and Darren Jones yesterday was very adamant that they're not going to break the fiscal rules, it will mean spending less.
Yeah, so we've got all of that to go. It's been It's all been quite busy, Kit, this beginning of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even if you take out the fact that in 10 days' time, Donald Trump will be president, and all of the impacts that that could have on us and our economy, you know, we have seen some absolute political insanity, both in the UK and some of it driven from America, in the 10 days of this year. You know, I like to be long-termist, but I, in my policy provisions and persuasions, but politics does move faster than policy. And we, you know, that's just a fact of life. So sometimes you have to react to the day-to-day, and sometimes you have to do things. Well, you have to do them both at the same time. You have to react day to day and you have to do long-term things.
Well, we mentioned the former Prime Minister. She has, Liz Truss, apparently tried to sue the Prime Minister. Go on, explain it more.
So Liz Truss has apparently sent a cease and desist letter, or Liz Truss's lawyers, rather, yeah, have sent a cease and desist lawyer to Keir Starmer saying that he needs to stop saying that she crashed the economy. And that has had a material impact on her reputation, and that it also had a material impact on her losing her seat.
Right. Right.
And I said all of that with a straight face, Charlotte. Aren't you proud?
I'm really proud. I don't quite know how to get here because I don't understand how this is making it better for her.
It's not making it better for her at all. I have a completely unsubstantiated theory that Liz Truss is being advised by people who want reform to take over from the Tories. Because the only benefit of Liz Truss being in the public eye is maintaining the Tories' problem with economic credibility. And the Tories are desperate to leave Truss behind. They may well take on some of her ideas, but they know that if they do so and those ideas get pegged as Truss ideas, they're in trouble. Because, you know, her reputation, the idea that anybody could materially damage Liz Truss's reputation more than Liz Truss materially damaged Liz Truss's reputation is for the birds.
Do you not think it's just more than that? Or less than that? It's just kind of personal pride.
She's a singular individual who, by all accounts from those I've spoken to, both who worked with her or have watched this closely, she's not someone who believes that she should take advice. So, I mean, when I say people who are advising her, I'm saying people who are leaning into what she already wants to do. I'm not, because as I say, her, you know, if you read all of the accounts, I've read several books now about her time in government, and you know, all of the accounts say that she had an incredibly small group of people who were her advisors, and that group of people were people she knew would do what she would just agree. You know, they were all of one very singular ideological determination. So, yeah, she doesn't have that thing that I think the best politicians have, which is keeping someone around who's clever and disagrees with you.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to test your ideas. It is also, I mean, there are so many parts of this that are fundamentally ridiculous. It's not least that Liz Truss is trying to brand herself everywhere that will take her views and publicise them as a champion of, wait for it, free speech.
Yes. Just on your point about sort of people telling her no and that kind of thing, And I mean this sincerely, surely there has to be someone, you know, forget what she's actually doing. Surely there has to be someone around you that's like, no, you need to stop now. You know, if I were doing something that was publicly embarrassing, I'd expect you to actually be like, Charlotte, stop now.
Well, you say that, but we don't, do we? We've all been in situations where we have friends that we have concerns about, and it takes quite a lot for us to intervene in those moments. People
sure,
do,
but there is a point.
And people have. There is a point. But again, I come back to, we all can choose who our small group of people we listen to are. And you can choose to only have enablers in that group. And we all know that that's the case when we might be aware that our behaviours are self-harming. So do you go out with the person who's going to scold you, or do you go out with the person who's going to make it much more fun and keep doing the thing that you want to do in the first place?
Yeah, all true. But there is a certain point. And look, whatever, she's the former Prime Minister. If she doesn't want to do something, she won't do it. But you sort of think there's got to be some people around.
I mean, there are conflicting motives here.
Sure.
You know, she is maintaining her public profile. If she wants to build that public profile as a right-wing agent provocateur, rather than as a statesperson, then this is what's going to help her do that. You know, however unhelpful that is to the party she once led.
I guess that's right. I guess that's ultimately what she thinks. I just find it a bit sort of, yeah, I just find it a bit funny the way it's all worked out. But anyway.
Oh, it's freaking hilarious. But, you know, you and I laughing at Liz Truss is not something she's not unused to.
I just think the level of self-awareness is quite, or lack thereof, is bizarre.
Well, we've always said that about her, though, haven't
we?
Yeah,
true. It's a,
you know, there is no self-awareness there.
Well, we will flip back to the Conservative Party, because Kemi Badenoch's having a bit of a funny week as well.
Yeah, now, I'm writing my newsletter on Kemi Badenoch's leadership this week. She is, all of the things I thought Kemi Badenoch was going to be quite good at in opposition, she's not really demonstrating. And it's quite interesting because Kemi Badenoch's conception of Kemi Badenoch, there were bits of that I really agreed with. I thought she was quite determined, single-minded, would pursue an idea because she thought it was right. But she seems to have had a week of followership, not leadership.
By which you mean?
By which I mean the take-up of the narrative around grooming gangs, up to and including calling for the release of data that was released in November, is coming from a narrative driven by certain right-wing commentators and certain right-wing media personalities.
Yes.
Rather than driven by the best politics and the best way of using politics for the long-term good of her party.
Yeah, I mean, surely the economic situation that we were talking about at the top of the show is really what you should have gone for at Prime Minister's questions, but that's not what happened.
All six questions on grooming gangs.
Yes.
Let the government off the hook on exactly what you were just saying, the, you know, the economic circumstances. And B, frankly, gave Keir Starmer an opportunity to go, actually, this is what I did, and lay out the changes that he made when he was Director of Public Prosecution.
Particularly when your first job was, she was the Children's Minister, wasn't she?
Yeah. So he got an opportunity to say, what did you do in the 10 years you were in government? What did you do? And here's what I did when I was actually in charge of prosecuting grooming gangs and made sweeping changes to how these things were dealt with as a direct response to these things.
Yeah, so it does seem a bit messy to me. And I don't quite understand what I guess if she hadn't asked a single question about it, people would have gone, oh, she's just denying what happened when she was in government. It's a bit of a delicate
balance.
But
you can split your questions. Yeah,
totally. That's
it felt Kemi Badenoch, one of her problems, I think, and I'm coming to see this more and more, is that she's too online. She is a Twitter leader of the opposition, not a Times leader of the opposition, for example.
Yeah, I think there is something in that. And actually, I should point out that a lot of what happened over the last few days with this story, about the gangs or whatever, accelerating, is GB News, where you are on. They're lucky enough to have you lots of the time. A story from them was picked up by Elon Musk and then it exploded over online. Now, this was a huge issue. The story of predominantly Pakistani men raping and sexually abusing predominantly white women is a huge story. I think there are huge inquiries that probably still need to be had, even though there has been stuff before. There is, the story probably has not been dealt with properly. Or there are still, things that need to be gone through. That's fine. But that I sort of think that, and it's important that happens, but also just on the raw politics, I'm surprised that Badenoch did things how she did them. And again, really not dismissing the seriousness of the issue, and I know you're not.
No, not at all. And neither, frankly, is the government. They just a different approach. And the government's set up an inquiry or a commission on social care, and I'm cross with them about that because it kicks it into the long grass.
It was 3 years, isn't it?
I'm going to make that argument about commissions, inquiries, kick things into the long grass. I think then it's perfectly consistent for me to say we should not have yet another inquiry into grooming gangs because we had a pretty good one that had a load of recommendations that have not been implemented.
Yeah.
Implement the recommendations first, and then if nothing changes, then have another inquiry.
Yeah. And I actually heard George Osborne and Ed Balls talking about this on another podcast where they were saying, actually, it can slow things down. There are ways you can... There's some sort of middle ground almost where you can use outside experts to maybe write a report of the current situation. You don't need to do an extensive new inquiry. That's not actually efficient. When actually, because it means the government kind of can't do very much until that's taking place.
No, and I think it used to be the charge that governments were just charging ahead based on ideology rather than evidence.
Sure.
And certainly that was the charge against Liz Truss. But there is a pendulum swing too far when all you do is gather evidence and not do any actual implementation of things.
Right. Yeah. And I was going to ask you about that kind of being pushed back 3 years thing, because, that's almost towards the end of a parliament. It's...
Well, we did talk about this on our Patreons only podcast. So people want my thoughts, they should really pay up for them.
They should.
I mean, I think the bit that I didn't
give
say
them
on
a
Patreon
15
that
second.
I will say here,
okay,
is there are going to be interim reports from this commission. So I think while I believe it's a mistake to do another 3-year commission, but I can see some of the politics of it. I think the proof of whether they can get anything done in this parliament will be down to those, what are the chunky effects of those early reports and how they're implemented.
Right. Yeah. I see what you're saying. I just want to actually just run another thing by you because I know it's an area you're passionate about, which was 2024. We learned this morning was the first year to pass the 1.5 degree centigrade global warming limit. Now,
yeah, and as we are speaking, California is on fire.
And as we're speaking, California is on fire. It's this is going to be another hugely important thing for this government to navigate.
Yeah.
It's, you know, this is a huge, huge global issue. And, well, and we've seen flooding here, of course, in the UK.
Absolutely. And this is the thing. Look, 1.5 degrees centigrade as a global temperature matters deeply to people like me who have got kind of into the weeds on climate policy mm-hmm. and international climate agreements and blah, blah, blah. But to Joe Bloggs on the streets, it's a bit abstract. Your house flooding, your neighbours flooding, your parents flooding, your train's inability to run because things are either too hot, too cold, too wet, or too frozen. These things are the things that matter. And this yeah. is where, and how much it costs to heat your house, to cool your house. These are the things that matter. And I think this is where a lot of the government's climate policy is quite clever, because it is about, you know, energy security, energy independence, which means that over time, A, we will stop contributing to climate change, which is vital and important, but we are, as the right and the climate deniers will always tell you, oh, it's a very small part of it, China, India. But more importantly to Joe Bloggs on the street, it brings your bills down.
Sure.
If we insulate your home, if the Warm Homes Programme takes off, it brings your bills down.
Sure.
If we are in charge of our own energy infrastructure, it brings your bills down.
Yeah,
I mean, we're not reliant on Putin turning on and off taps.
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying that China and India have a rather big impact, but that also doesn't mean we can't do stuff ourselves.
Exactly, exactly. A, exactly that, and B, China is actually in the last 5 years really start to lead on these things. Not because they've got this some massive moral crusade. That's not how China works. But because they can see, and China unfortunately is not a democracy. One of the side effects of not being a democracy is you can do a lot of long-term planning.
Yes, exactly. You could just get on with stuff and not have to worry about the other lot coming to get you.
Yeah. No, I am not saying that China is not a democracy. I think it's appalling that China is not a democracy. I think China's human rights record is terrible.
It's fine. You don't need to do
that.
There
are occasional good side effects of it is, I think, undeniable.
Right, well, that's going to be the headline. Emma is a communist.
I'm really looking forward to the episode title.
Emma is a communist dictator.
If I were a communist dictator, the world would be any form of dictator. If the world was just Emmaism, we'd be great.
And so, our glorious leader, where can people find you?
I'm on Substack at my newly named Political Human Substack, and I'm on Blue Sky rather than Twitter these days at Emma Bunnell.
I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media. Please head over to theaddition.net where you can see my newsletter, other podcasts, blog posts, all sorts of things. The best way to support all of both of what Emma and I have said and this show is to head over to patreon.com/House of Commons podcast. For a mere fiver a month, a fiver, Emma, you get... A fiver. You get both of our paid newsletters. You get and extra episodes of this podcast. It is, quite frankly, a bargain. So that's that's patreon.com/House of Commons podcast. It really does make all the difference to have your support there. So thank you so much. It's been a nice quiet start to the year.
Very chill. I'm sure 2025 is going to be so relaxed.
So relaxed. We'll see you next week.